Have you ever worked a 9-to-5 or a day job and struggled to keep your creative life going? It can be really hard when you're in one of these situations to make sure you maintain your creativity and keep your spirit open to the creative force of life. Luckily today, I have a guest who has managed to do just that. He also happens to be my boyfriend. Welcome to Unleash Your Inner Creative with Lauren LaGrasso. I'm Lauren LaGrasso. I'm an award-winning podcast host and producer, singer-songwriter, public speaker, and creative coach. And this show is meant to give you tools to love, trust, and know yourself enough to do whatever it is that's on your heart and claim your right to creativity. And today, I have my amazing boyfriend, Timothy Michael Blewett, with me in the house. Welcome, Timmy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
First time to Unleash Your Inner Creative Studios. How does it feel?
I love it in here. I love what you've done with the place. I also helped put it together, so I'm reaping the fruits of my labor.
Yeah, we had quite a time putting in the rug.
Oh, yeah. Even right before we started, we said we're never taking this rug up, ever.
So the deal with it is it's a ruggable rug, and those rugs are supposed to be super easy to clean and put together. But this rug tested every fiber of our being and our relationship, and somehow we finally got it down, but it literally took us hours, multiple days, and like a 2-month break because we put it down the wrong way and we just like didn't deal with it for 2 months because we're like, we'll come back to this.
We also, weren't we in a FedEx once because we had to send a ruggable back?
Oh my God.
We got one that was the wrong dimensions. And so we went to the FedEx and we thought that they could handle it for us. And they said, oh no, you need to roll it up for us and package it and put it in here. So we literally just like took up 16 square feet. I don't even know if that's correct.
I forgot about that.
But we rolled this thing. We unfurled it in the middle of FedEx and rolled it back up and packaged it. And the woman behind the counter said like, oh, thank you very much. We'll send it back.
We went in there with it just rolled up. And she's like, oh, we don't have a box for that. You're going to have to like roll it up yourself and put it back in the original box. And we're like, okay. We were literally rolling a rug in the middle of a FedEx in Burbank. If you want to know what we do on a Wednesday afternoon. But anyway, yeah, last time you were here, we recorded from bed because the Unleashed studio didn't exist. So I'm happy to have you back. And I'm really excited to talk with you today about what you've been finding since you've been working this 9-to-5 and really just like what you've been up to since last time, because it's been almost a full year since you've been on the pod.
Yeah. So last time we talked, I'm trying to remember what we covered. I remember we had our relationship story, and I remember we were talking about artistry and creativity.
I don't even remember what we talked about last time we were on, but I know we had a good time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's always a good time. I also like how I've been moving from the bed to the closet to the studio.
Oh, I remember what we talked about last time. Last time you were on was Mental Health Awareness Month, May. Actually, almost has been exactly a full year. And we talked about mental health within relationships.
Right. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
So how has your mental health in this relationship been?
I think it's been great. I think that we have taken on responsibilities and courage to like meet each other halfway. And I think that that plays a huge part in it. And then I think just in life, like growing as people and then growing together. Like it's interesting when you become like two vines or two roots of two different trees, you're next to each other, you begin to grow together. I think that that's like what we were doing.
What kind of tree am I?
An elm.
Yes, like my street, like your back street. Home.
Yeah. Which kind of tree am I?
Birch.
Oh, yeah. That used to be my favorite tree.
Well, I intuited that.
We had a birch in the backyard and something about the bark. I love the way that, like, I would peel the bark, which is probably not good for the tree, but
it's
something
fine.
About the way that it peeled. And I loved climbing it. That was my favorite tree to climb.
Honey, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. I just intuitively said birch. We don't have birch trees around here.
Yeah, I haven't seen a single birch in LA.
We need to plant one. Maybe they can't grow in this area.
Yeah.
But maybe they can. Let's try. So that's good. We also moved in together since last time we were on here. So how have you liked being my roommate?
Good. Good. I've liked it so much.
I've liked it good. I've liked it good. Very good.
I've liked it good. Very good.
I'm not a prisoner.
No, it's been really good. I think it was rocky at the start as like any moving in together of two different people. Like I've had that with roommates for my entire life as an adult, like through college, through...
I'm just thinking of one specific thing you said to me.
What did I say?
That was the worst move-in experience you've ever had.
Yeah. So it can only go up from there.
It did. I think it went up within a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It did.
See, started a low, go to a high. What happened was I didn't expect him to have that much stuff. And I just had a meltdown over it. I'm going to be real honest.
And let me be honest. I am a minimalist and I have nothing. I literally packed up whatever could fit in a car that I financed in Chicago, drove it to LA, and that's basically still the same amount of stuff that I have to this day.
Which is why I was surprised there was so much stuff.
The car was a Ford Fusion 2009.
But it was also what you'd gotten since then. And also, it wasn't that much stuff. It just looked like a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd never lived with a boyfriend before. I think part of it was it's so vulnerable sharing your life with someone in this way, because you can't just, I mean, I know we're not married yet, but you can't just walk away, you know, like when you live with someone, it's serious. Like you're, like you said, you're two trees growing separately, but your branches are starting to intertwine. And it's like, it's going to take a chainsaw to get through it. It's not like you can just like wander off into the breeze and sprout flowers somewhere else. Not easily.
Yeah, I think also at that time, like when I was moving in, like you were not only accepting my things, but like we were talking about the other day, like you're accepting my emotional attachment to these things.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these things I recognize, like I don't need them, but I'm not ready to let go of them. So you're accepting that energy and that emotional attachment to these things that I'm not even ready to let go of. And you're accepting my history into the space, and you're accepting much more than just me, the person. And I think that that's something that I didn't take into account, because as I was moving things in, I was like sweaty and often tired at the end of the day. And I was on a timeline to like get things out at the end of my lease at the other place and to move in a timely manner. But the fact remains, like, you're accepting all these things that for me, I've always just interpreted it as like, it's just me and like, here's my stuff and like, where's my space? But what we're trying to cultivate together is much more energetically different and bigger than anything else that I've moved into.
Yeah. I mean, I think for both of us, and I think the thing I didn't think about was that you were moving into my space. So like, I need to be welcoming to you because I'm already established here and you're getting established here for the first time. It's not the same as if two people are moving into a neutral unit. Like you were coming into my condo. So anyway, we learn from it. And, you know, next time we move, hopefully we'll both be moving together to a neutral space, and it will be moving our stuff, not your stuff or my stuff.
Yeah, well, we will be. I mean, that's the nature of our Yay! Of our beasts together.
We're a big beast, baby.
Big beast of burden. Yeah, and I think we have built together from there, and
yeah,
we've both like learned how to be respectful with each other's space and each other's things, and we're still learning and we're growing. And even just an hour or two ago, we were talking about having a fund for the house specifically, and
yeah,
it's like, this is things that we give to the space, so it's stuff that benefits not only us but the space with our pride in ownership, and then our guests that we welcome in too, where they can be like, wow, I love the care and the time and the effort that you've given to this space.
100%. I'm wondering, what has been the best part of living together so far?
You make me coffee in the morning sometimes.
Yes. That's the best part.
I start low and then I work high.
Okay.
What's high? I think that that's a beautiful thing. I think that it's beautiful that we do things for each other out of love. I think that's one of the best things in our relationship. Either we see that the other person needs something, or we just feel like, I love you so much, I want to give something to you out of the kindness of my heart. And like, here's a nice, simple thing.
Well, I guess in that vein, I like that you take out the trash.
Yeah, all the time, baby.
I haven't taken out the trash in months.
Yeah.
And
trash,
it feels great.
Trash and recycling. That's my jam. There's something that I like about that corner or that area where I'm like, I like to keep this clean.
Tim's Corner.
Tim's Corner.
Tim's Clean Corner.
Tim's Clean Corner.
And I also like just being able to play with you all day. Like from a creative standpoint, we just write stupid songs together all day. Like I'll start singing a stupid song and then you'll like add a second verse and then we sing it. And we've created some really good ones. Should we sing our chicken shawarma song?
Yeah.
Okay. This was a song we actually made up when we had COVID together and we ordered chicken shawarma and it was dry. And for the record, we weren't high, but it just rhymed. Okay. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4. 5.
Chicken shawarma makes me cry when it is dry and I am high.
Boom, 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 boom. Cause all I want is piles
high to the sky.
Oh, to the sky. Wet chicken.
Wet chicken. Oh, wet chicken. Wet chicken. Oh, wet chicken. Wet chicken. Oh, wet chicken. Wet chicken, oh,
wet chicken, yeah. So we like to take things too far.
Coming to iTunes via Shmo Yoho.
What's Shmo Yoho?
They're the Gregory brothers. They did the, what's the one that we always reference? Dead Giveaway.
Dead Giveaway.
Dead Giveaway. Dead Giveaway. But yeah, they would love that song. That's like right up their alley.
Well, that's one of my favorite parts of living with you. I just love that we take things too far and make things up every single day and we play every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much fun.
Yeah, it is. Like, I can't quite describe it, but it's like it's like a built-in theater of sorts. And like anyone that has ever attended like theater class or some sort of art where you just express yourself, whether it's through your voice or through your actions or an instrument, it just feels like that. Like you show up and then you just like someone play, it's like a note of jazz. Someone plays something and then you play something else and then you just play.
And it's a totally safe space every single time. Like you could never say something too weird to me and I could never say something too weird to you.
Yeah.
It's so fun. It's my dream. Truly. Like that was my favorite thing. Like whenever I would think about who I'd want to be with, I was like, I just need to be able to be weird with them. And I can't even stop it. Like sometimes I'm like, I gotta say something weird or else I might not make it. And you always are like, yeah, or play along.
Hey, baby, try this.
I say things like that all day. Sometimes Tim doesn't want to try it.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like, oh, that's nice, baby.
Okay, well, I'm so happy we gave them an update about how we're doing, but we're very much in love.
Yes.
And grateful for each other. And this time has also been a huge time of transition for you because you went from 10 years being fully a renegade on the run artist to now working a full-time job and being an artist. So tell me about what prompted that transition and then we'll go from there.
Ultimately, what prompted that transition was the writers and the actors strike. When that was happening over the summertime, I literally could not work. And if I knew anything about the strike or like what we were asking for as a SAG member, I figured it was going to be at least a few months, like at least 3 months. And at that time, I didn't have a lot of work that was coming in. And I also recognized that I wanted something that was a little more stable. Well, the last time I had a steady paycheck was working on Rebel Moon, which part 2 is coming out in a month, April 19th.
Check it out. Timmy's in it.
Check it out. I'm one of the wheat farmers.
He literally learned how to harvest wheat. So cool.
Netflix taught me how to harvest wheat in the field for old Zacky Snyder.
We grew up in the Midwest, but he had to move to LA and get hired by Netflix in order to learn how to harvest wheat. Because he was cast as a wheat harvester.
But even that was a year before the writer's strike. And that was a steady paycheck. And even that was unstable. We were told that we were going to be able to work like 5 days a week. And in the summer, that was true. We were on that set for 5 months. But toward September, October, we were working like 3 out of 5 days, then 2 out of 5 days. Then it was like, hey, we need a couple pickup shots. So it became less and less stable. So really, it had been a year since I had had like a stable, steady job. And for some of the things that I'm interested in pursuing now, I thought at that time, I was like, I want a steady paycheck.
Yeah.
That's what I want. And so that, with the writer strike and then the actor strike, was the overall catalyst that was like, this is happening, whether I like it or not. Like, I'm getting a gig.
Okay, so you start applying for jobs, and then you end up getting this job that you have now at LA Film School. Tell me a little bit about that. And yeah, like, how are you finding creativity while you're working this 9-to-5? I think you've done some great things while you're there.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. We've had many conversations about this. So I know that my resume is impressive. I didn't know that at the time. Like, 1 year ago, I didn't think that my resume is impressive, but it is, and it's extensive. And there's stuff from, there's international work, there's national work, there's all kinds of different fields, there's degrees, there's a master's degree, there's work ethic.
A lot of people don't know your story because when you've come on, you've mostly talked about just like the topic, but he studied at one of the, well, maybe not the biggest, but one of the best physical theater schools in the world and got a master's degree, traveled all around Europe producing and acting in different plays that you created, worked in Chicago Professional Theater, has taught at multiple universities theater. He's also done, like, he's been a bartender. Like, you've really run the gamut as far as jobs go.
Yeah. For whatever reason, I didn't see what that was worth in our current working world, in our current working nation, because a lot of my work experience and life experience is on the artistic side. Like, I know how to produce a show. I know how to communicate. I know how to fundraise for money from different sources. I know how to improvise. I know how to memorize. I have so many life skills, but I don't know how that fits into the corporate agenda, especially when you're looking on Indeed.com or LinkedIn, and it's like, we want this and we want that. And like, we, you know, can you settle for this? And team player.
Mm-hmm.
Those words didn't speak to my soul. So when I was looking for a job, I was like, I recognize that I've done a lot, but I don't know how to sell myself to fit into this world. So I was kind of looking for whatever would kind of mesh with what I was looking for at the time, which I wanted something to be of service. I did not want to do anything that was not going to be helping someone in some capacity. So at the Los Angeles Film School, I work in their financial aid department. And this is a huge part of my personal story of, I went to undergrad, financed my own way. I'm still paying off my student loans. And I thought, like, that would be amazing if I could help other people understand as they're going through college, like, here's your dream, here's how you can finance your dream, and here's what you're going to have to do afterward when you get out. I saw that opportunity, applied for it, and by the grace of God, they were saying, you know, we're looking for a few people. We had an interview, and they said, you fit the bill. We'd love to hire you. It was couple days after the 4th of July, I think, or it was a couple days before the 4th of July.
It was right before we went out for your birthday. We went to Mexico.
I think it was right before the 4th of July they contacted me, and I just thought, like, I can relax, like, it's done, like, I can celebrate. And we went to Mexico, and it was beautiful. It was like, we're going to have this time, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to have a steady job, steady employment, and just going to take it from there. So I recognize it as divine timing in a way of, like, it was meant to be, everything aligned. And we talked about this a lot of, like, literally there's a strike going on in the city that I'm living in the industry that I'm in. I cannot get a job if I want to, an entertainment job.
I remember saying to you at the time, because I knew you were having a lot of doubts of, like, am I doing the right thing? Because all you've ever wanted up until that point was to make your living as a professional actor, and you had been doing that. And I was like, baby, if you have any doubt, God gave you the ultimate sign that you got this job the day the actor strike was announced.
Yeah.
It was literally the day the actor strike was announced. So it was like, if you had doubt, here's the doubt that can be relieved.
That's what it was. Yeah. Now I remember that. Yeah. It was like here's the strike. Like, we had heard rumors that was going to happen. And so I was putting my feelers out there. And sure enough, like, when the strike went out, I got my employment offer letter and was like, there it is.
Yeah. You brought up a good point, because I think a lot of people, myself included, like, I got into podcasting and radio kind of through luck. I mean, it was hard work, but I was just in the right place at the right time, and somebody saw my talent and pulled me in. But for people who are like you and who worked in creative industries and are now looking to maybe get something that's more corporate or like office based, there's so many skills. I mean, smart people know that theater majors are the best people to hire, or artists, or any sort of creative people, because we're scrappy, we think outside the box, we're hard workers. Things that seem hard to other people don't seem hard because we've literally tortured ourselves by choice for years.
It's within our nature to fill the role.
Yeah.
So like, you know, if someone gives me Stanley Kowalski, I'm going to find a way to be Stanley Kowalski.
Right.
If someone gives me financial aid counselor at Los Angeles Film School, I'm going to find a way to be the best financial aid counselor at Los Angeles Film School.
And most people know who Stanley Kowalski is, but for those that don't, from Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Williams, a great play, a great part that was made famous by Marlon Brando. And you would be great at the role, honey.
Thank you.
But for people who are like us and who are looking to take their creative skills and kind of put them through the filter of the corporate world, what would be your advice for them to, one, get these potential employers' attention, and two, that they could like channel their skills in an interview to let them know they have what it takes to do this job?
That's a really good question. Number one, playing to your strengths, like anything. I think that that's where I kind of fell into trouble. And I think that a lot of people like us, creatives and artists, can fall into the same pattern, especially those that are young and that are on the journey or like very new into the journey of being an artist. You have a very particular strength that you know and that everybody else knows, but you might be a little humble to present that. And in the corporate environment, like, that should be at the top of the list. That's what you should be presenting as. Even from our training and our lessons in the theater world, when you're walking in for an audition, from the moment you walk in to casting, they're sizing you up, and in 3 seconds, they can tell whether they want to hire you or not. It literally is that confidence that you're holding in your body. So when you get an interview, I think that that's something to keep in mind, of like just that confidence in your body. And maybe even if it helps when writing out your resume or submitting, like doing a power stance and submitting. This is nothing that I did, by the way. But
stand up tall, then submit.
But I can say that because I didn't do that, I think I was more anxious about submitting. And so I'm thinking, like, if I was to do it all over again, I would find a way that would put me in more confidence, especially in terms of my strengths.
And just to like speak to like some of the techniques that you actually used on your resume, we took your experience and made like the headlines the most impressive thing. So it was like, what was it? Associate professor or?
Yeah, adjunct called? Professor.
Yeah. So we put like adjunct professor, because he's done that 2 or 3 times at different places. And then we put underneath it all the times he's done it and the years that he had done it. So versus like listing teacher or something, you know, a lot of times, like he's saying, like, you undersell yourself because you're just like, well, I just did a little of this and a little of that. But it's about taking the things you did and framing them in the most impressive light, because they are impressive, and then doing that for each experience you have. And also, like, because corporations really like to see that you've worked at a place at a long time, if you've done something over a long period of time, even if there were breaks, making sure you keep those years going, like making sure that you like put, okay, I worked it from 2023 to 2024.
Yeah, I think even working backwards, as I'm thinking about this, I shot my shot and now I've been working at this job for about 7 months. And from what I see in the corporate environment, as opposed to like what my skills are, I think that some of the biggest things to tee into, one is like deadlines. As creatives, like, we absolutely have a deadline. Does someone need a piece of artwork painted and delivered by a specific time? Yes. And I will get it to them, or I don't get my paycheck. I don't get paid. I don't get to eat. Does the performance go on at 7 p.m. on April 19th? Yes. And so I've got my lines memorized and I'm showing up by this time. And by the way, I've rehearsed all that. So just the importance of like a strict deadline and the communication. And then from there, you kind of weave in like teamwork and communication, and saying like, I'm communicating with those that are higher up than me. I'm communicating with those that are going to help me get my job done. I'm also a team player, flexible. When I used to apply to jobs, like I'm thinking right after I graduated from college, and even in the interim, you know, over the past 10, 12 years of just like looking for employment here and there, I used to think like, oh, like this is so stupid. Like, yeah, team player. Like,
but you do that all the time being on a cast.
It's so true. I think the reason why I didn't understand it back then is like I didn't have the experience of being in the corporate world, and I didn't know how important those skills actually are. Being able to convey to an employer, like, look, I've actually got these skills. I'll never forget one of the first critiques that my current employer, like my boss, gave to me as we had like a 90-day review. And he just flat out told me, he was like, I love your empathy when you're connecting with students. And I can't teach empathy. And it's so hard to like try to get people to understand that. And that's an art thing. Like definitely theater. Musicians have it, painters have it, like anyone that is in the arts, because you have to be empathetic to connect with another human being or a society or the culture around you, and you can't teach it. And for the line of work that I'm doing, it speaks in droves, because I've been on phone calls with students that really are at wit's end, and being able to just connect and listen and hear them out and then speak with expertise and then find a solution, it, one, diffuses the problem in lightning speed, but also like you truly establish a connection and people no longer feel like they're afraid on the other end. Because I think that's where, at least in my line of work, the person I'm trying to connect with, there's a fear that arises. And, you know, maybe for employers, there's a fear as well of like, I need to fill this position. I've got to find the right person. And if you can connect with the employer and put their mind at ease and be like, hey, I've got exactly what you're looking for. You need empathy, you need communication, you need deadlines, you need teamwork. That's what I've been doing in undergrad. That's what I've been doing in high school. That's what I've been doing afterwards. I've got what you need.
Yeah, because if you think about it too, the employer is putting themselves on the line by hiring you. So you want them to know that if they hire you, it's not going to be a mistake and you're going to do a good job. Okay, that's great advice for people who want to get a corporate job, who've been mostly working in the creative world. But for people who are currently either in a corporate job or have a day job or just working a job that it's great, they like it or even love it, but there's so many other creative things they want to do. How do you maintain your creativity when you're working 9 to 5 or 9 to 6?
I would say my creativity became more disciplined.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think just by nature of the beast, my job starts at 9 a.m. and it ends at 6 p.m. So I've got the morning hours before that that I can use. I usually use them for sleep, but I
almost all of them.
I should be more disciplined. And then I've got the hours after 6 p.m. until I try to go to bed around midnight so that I can like get a full 8 hours and, you know, that sort of a thing. And then I've got my weekends. So I've got a full Saturday and a full Sunday. And I think because I know when I am needed at work, I know exactly when I can be creative in the hours that I can be creative. And that doesn't mean that I'm not like taking breaks or I'm not thinking about other projects like while I'm at work or doing my thing. But to like really set aside the time to say like, this is when I can be creative, it's very regimented. So there's kind of a strict discipline there. And I think that a younger me never understood the importance of that. When I graduated college, I was like, whoa, like this is amazing. This is a free for all. Like I can do whatever, whenever I can go. Like there's an audition at 10 a.m. and then there's another one at 4 p.m. And like, and then you get a job as an actor and you're like, I don't rehearse today until 3 p.m. until 9, but then the next day it's 9 a.m. until 3. So everything was all over the place and constantly changing. And if I didn't hustle to get that work, then I didn't have a job and then I couldn't pay rent and I couldn't eat. And I liked that life, but it's just different. Now what I'm engaged with is something that is more disciplined and more rigid, but there's more availability for me to put that creativity into outlets that I don't have to be physically present in. So
what does that mean?
I'm not doing this per se, but let's say YouTube or TikTok or, you know, thinking about those things. What I am doing is I'm writing a book. I'm also trying to create a course curriculum for like a virtual online course. So these are things that I can create within this discipline structure that then I can put out. It's a creative outlet, and then hopefully it's a means of income afterwards. But nonetheless, like if I'm working 9 to 6 and I'm creative outside those hours, I have that and I don't have to worry like there's nothing for me to do from 6 p.m. to 9 a.m. I'm not worried like I'm missing out on an audition or I'm missing out on something. Like I've got different creative outlets to work on.
Hey, creative. If you love the show and it has meant a lot to you, could you do me a favor? Rate and review on Apple. Give it a review on Spotify. Share it with a friend. These things all make a major difference in a podcaster's life and in growing their show. And I really want to build up this community of creatives who love, trust, and know themselves and love, trust, and deeply know others. So if you could do that and share the show with someone you care about, that would mean so much. All right. I love you. So tell me what you think is the biggest benefit and drawback of your former life, which was being a vagabond artist living in wagons. Literally, he lived in a wagon in Europe for at least a few weeks.
Couple weeks. Yeah.
Touring around, doing plays, but not making much money. To this, where you're making steady money, like good money, but it's taking up more of your time and like you have like greater boundaries around your time. So what would you say are the benefits and drawbacks of each for people who are listening and are like trying to decide what direction they're going to go in next?
Yeah, immediately. I mean, you named it right off the bat of
I buried the lead.
You got it. I mean, I think everybody knows, like, I'm literally trading my time for money. When I was not working a 9 to 5, like, I had from 12:01 a.m. to 11:59 p.m. to, like, make my money. And it was all my time, and I got to figure out. If I got a job as an actor, then I would trade some of that time. But I also, like, I would feel, at least out here in LA, a lot of it is film. So you're hired for like a day or you're hired for a couple days or a week at most. 5 months that I did the Zack Snyder thing, that was unheard of. But, you know, you take it and then you just say like, this is what I've got and then it will be ending and then my time will return to me. Now, this corporate position, day in, day out, until I pull the plug and say I want to stop, not from 9 to 6, that is not my time anymore. That is time that a company owns me, essentially. And I don't like that. I also don't like that sometimes you and I are like, I just want to get away for the weekend, or I want to leave on a Thursday or a Wednesday and come back on a Monday or a Tuesday. I can't really do that with my schedule.
Because it's a hybrid work.
Yeah, yeah, it's a hybrid work from home, work in the office, but also the nature of my job too is to kind of like be on call and be present. And I personally, much like we were speaking about filling that role as an artist, I want to fill that role and I want to be good at my job, which is why if you're an employer, you should be hiring theater artists.
100%.
Artists in general.
We're the best. Because we care. We care so much. If you only knew how much we care, you would really only hire artists.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, we want to be so good at what we do and we want to explore and share.
I had never produced a show. And within 3 or 4 years of producing my first show, I was an associate producer. I wasn't even a full-time producer. I produced a number one hit show. What? Like it's hard? But the reason is because I care. I care about people. I see people. And that's the thing that artists do. And the reason why employers are like, oh, must have a business degree. It's like, if you only knew how much artists actually knew about, well, not all of them, but a lot of them know about business because of what we've had to accomplish for ourselves. Like Tim, you, for example, the reason why you're so good at this job is because you've had to have a very strict budget for the past decade. And so in order to survive, you've learned how to be your own financial aid counselor, which is why you can waltz into this role and be at the top of your training class.
Yeah. Yeah. We were trained out of Full Sail, Florida Full Sail University in Florida. So I was waking up to be trained for this position at 5 a.m. in Los Angeles so I could attend this training class. And I ended up like graduating top of my class, essentially.
Okay. So going back to it, so did you state the best thing about living the 9-to-5 life and the best thing about living the free life?
Yeah. I mean, my artist life, like I loved waking up in the Wagenplatz in Germany.
Explain what that is to people who don't know, which is everyone.
Yeah, it's a place in Cologne, and it's on their national registry as like, this is our national place of interest.
It's called the Wagenplatz.
The Wagenplatz. And it basically it's a place that the government gives to artists for free and says like, I think you have to apply to get in and you have to be a German national. And they say, like, we want our culture to thrive, so we're going to give you this space for free, this land for free, but you have to live 100% on the land, and you just live for free.
In a wagon.
In a wagon. So that, for example, like, I would, at my current job that I have now, I would never be able to...
live in a wagon.
Engage in that opportunity, because I would have to either tell my employers, like... are you going to allow me to do this? And maybe we could work something out without pay. But I don't know, that just seems so icky to me to ask permission for something so beautiful. Because at that time, my flight was paid for and I was just to perform. So it was like, Tim, we're going to pay for you to come over to Germany from Chicago. And you're going to live in this Wagenplatz in a wagon. And you're going to be the lead in this play. What artist would turn that down and say, you know, oh, I've got a 9-to-5.
So that's the worst thing about having the 9-to-5.
Yeah.
What's the best thing about having it?
The best thing is the stability, the skill, and seeing what it has afforded me of being able to actually plan, use what it's giving me to build a nice foundation. I got accepted into the Groundlings training program.
Yes, which has been amazing.
So this job has allowed me to feel very comfortable in putting down the big bucks to attend that training program.
Buckles.
And to pay rent and to pay for food and to go out on dates and save some money for other things. So there's that kind of stability that is amazing. And then I think also...
you've also helped so many people. Like all the students you've helped get scholarships.
Yeah.
Like one day you helped 8 students get a scholarship.
Yeah.
Not to put words in your mouth, but I feel proud of you for that.
Thank you. Being able to help students and like helping them get as much financing as they can. I love doing that. But I will say too, something that I read recently was that Carl Jung, he would not accept students into his like psychology apprenticeship if they weren't skilled in something else, which I find really interesting. Because it's kind of a swap. He wanted people to have a mastered skill and then to like come and learn something else. So like my mastered skill, I would say, would be the craft of acting. And I'm learning this sort of like other job on the side. Whereas I think that it's important for young artists to master something else on the side in addition to going after their craft. Because then you're always going to have this passion inside of acting or artistry or what have you. But if you have something else that's mastered that the country wants or that employers want, like you've got that and you're a hot commodity. And then you've got this other thing on the side that no one can ever take from you.
And also you understand more about the world and what, like, for lack of a better word, everyday people are going through. And I'm not saying like, you have to do everything in order to understand and be an artist. But if you never experience some of the most simple things of life, like working in an office or, you know, doing a day job, I don't think you can create as honestly, because there's so much inspiration that comes from every part of that. The pain of it, the sometimes monotony of it, the little triumphs you experience within it, the feeling when you get to go on vacation, the camaraderie you feel with your favorite coworker, like that's all a well of inspiration.
Yeah, it's its own little ecosystem. And I think I personally am just not aware of how many people in our country and the world, I suppose by proxy, are privy to that culture and that ecosystem. So when there's someone that can portray it at face value, whether it's through a painting or a song or a play or a film or a TV show, it resonates that much more. And when there's someone that breaks out of that, I think it's also just as inspiring for someone that is within that ecosystem to look at them and to say, like, that guy broke out. Like, that's amazing. Like, maybe I could do the same.
Right. What's the worst thing about being an artist, like, full time in the way you were? Because you didn't say anything bad about it.
Is there anything bad?
Maybe there's not.
No, yeah, there is. I mean, the instability,
yeah,
for sure. You know, like the lean years and the fat years. You know, you could speak volumes about those lean years and how difficult they are and struggling to get through them. I was telling you before we started this a few hours ago about how, like, when I first graduated college, I had to go to a food bank in Chicago, and how interesting that was to, like, experience that for the first time, but also how demoralizing it was to be like, I budgeted incorrectly and I don't know how to feed myself this month, and experiencing that. And I think that there's a lot of artists out there that can relate of, like, I couldn't make ends meet and I had to ask for help from someone, and it can hurt. So I think that that's probably the hardest part of being an artist, is knowing already that you're going against the grain, and knowing that going against the grain is not rewarded often.
What will it take our culture to support creative people when creative people bring the most joy that our world has, and yet for some reason we've decided that's what has the least amount of value? What will it take?
I don't know. I mean, I will say that, like, some places in Europe where I've been to and toured, they do have disrespect for the arts. And, you know, when we traveled to Germany and Italy, and
even my cousins, remember, the one of the first things they said is, like, she's an artist.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just over there, there's just a completely different respect for art, like a completely different respect. And I think there's something to be said for that. Like, the Wagenplatz where I was staying, the government literally was like, we respect what you guys are doing so much that we want to give you this land. That's all we're going to give you. But, like, we'll give you a free place to stay and hang your hat as long as you can make your way. Think about having that in a city like Los Angeles, the city just being like, we love our artists on the ground so much that we're going to give, like, free rent. I mean, you would save lives.
It would be a completely different world. It would, yeah, make LA a much easier place to live in, even for the people who don't need or want to use that opportunity. Part of what makes LA so difficult to live in is you're constantly metabolizing the energy of disappointment and despair from other people. And if you are a sensitive person, good luck to you. You are constantly metabolizing that. And if we had some sort of program to support artists that were trying to make it or that had fallen down on their luck, if we would support them, I think the energy of the city would feel completely different for everybody. But it's not a city that supports the downtrodden in any way, and definitely not artists. It just kicks you in the ass.
Yeah. I guess it's not even, you know, eat or be eaten, kill or be killed. It's kind of like kill or, like, be on the street and become a dog, that, yeah, kind of a thing. Because they, like, you see so many people that are just, they don't have a soul anymore. Like, it's just their body.
Well, their dignity has been taken away.
Yeah.
I guess our country would be completely different if they actually supported creatives and artists in the way they should.
I would genuinely ask your listeners and just put that out as a genuine call and response of, like, what is the solution to that? Like, how do we move closer toward that? I don't necessarily know that the government has any interest or is any in any position to care about that. So how on the local level is it possible to bring that into fruition? Or, like, how do you get the immediate populace to begin caring about people that are artists, musicians, singers, songwriters, actors, dancers? How do you get care and interest for that?
Putting it out to the creative cuties. Let us know what you think. So my final question, baby, I know you have been creating systems to help you be creative every single day. You started out taking the Groundlings class this year. That really invigorated you and started you on a creative note this year and has been amazing. But what have you been doing since that class wrapped up to continue to keep your creative energy going? And what can other people do?
Yeah, I think that this, again, speaks to a lot of the discipline that I was talking about earlier. So like, if you know you're working from 9 to 5 or 9 to 6, then you know that you got to get your system in place either before in the beginning of the day and then work and then it continues on afterwards, or like right after work, like do jumping jacks, get your body going, and then like get into your art.
Why does that help the body?
Well, one, at least for me, and maybe it's similar for other people, that I'm at a desk basically all day. Mm. And so like I notice my body is atrophying and I need it to be energized, because if my body is lethargic and sluggish, then my mind can meld with it just so that we feel at peace and in some sort of like regulation and stasis. But if at the end of the workday, my body is ready to go, my mind's going to catch up with it, and then we can be creative. And I think from there, it comes to just setting small, attainable, consistent goals.
Yes.
To get things done. And you had given me this idea the other day where you said, I'm having trouble with my system. I don't know how to achieve these small, attainable, consistent goals. And you had said, I think what you need is 2 pages every single day of your book that you're writing so that you can get it out to meet your deadline. And like, logically, before that point, I was like, yeah, like I know, like a page a day, you know, whatever, you know. But somehow, like, hearing it from you, or having you validate it and repeat back to me and saying like, this is what I'm gonna want to hold you accountable to, instantly made me think like, all right, well, that's it. Okay, 2 pages a day. I know I can do that. And if I don't do that, I know that I'm gonna feel anxious for the remaining hours of the day. I'm not gonna sleep well. Then the next day I'm gonna wake up and I'm gonna feel anxious and depressed, and it's just gonna become a whole thing. So even just making the conscious choice today or tomorrow to begin, and then getting after your small, attainable, consistent goals. And then even if you don't meet them, trying. If I don't do 2 pages, I've got 1 page. If I don't do 1 page, I've got a paragraph. And that's something that was not in existence the day before.
And making any progress every day adds up. Because what we did was we went on a walk and we kind of coached each other. So we went on a creative walk. You might want to try this with your partner or friend or family member, but you go on a creative walk and you kind of just talk about what's bothering you and where you feel stuck in your creative life. And Timmy mentioned, you know, he really wants to complete this book. This is at the top of his creative wish list. And so I took this thing that Julia Cameron says, which is, if you write 2 pages a day, at the end of 2 months, you have 60 pages. At the end of 4 months, you have 120, if that's how long you want your book to be. And the book's done at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you need to go a little longer. I don't know. Depends on what kind of book it is and how long your pages are. But that seemed to really set you free. And so like, you created 2 creative goals. That was one of them. I think the other one's a little bit more personal. But, you know, like, you're working on those 2 things every single day. And you're getting closer every single day. I think sometimes, I know what happens with me being a multi-passionate creative, which most of us are, is I'm like, oh, I have to do everything. And then I beat myself up because I end up doing some things, but really a lot of times it feels like nothing because I haven't made headway on anything. So I do think it comes down to prioritizing when you're in a full-time job situation. What are your top creative goals? And what are small attainable steps you can use to get there every single day?
Yeah. And I'll just say too, like, if you don't have someone that you can speak to this on, or like to have someone reflect back to you, maybe just take a week and jot down and journal, like, what is that creative thought that keeps coming back to me every single day? Or it's the first creative thought that keeps coming back to me every single day. After a week, that's what you should be going after. And then you can define, like, what are my small, consistent gains that I can do to go after this? Because I have so many creative projects that I feel like are just in the forefront of my mind that I'm like, oh, how am I going to tackle all these? And then nothing gets done, as opposed to having you, or if you don't have anyone, having this meditation technique of like, what is the one thing that keeps coming back to me that's what I need to go after. Now, how do I do it? And break it down from there.
Yeah, it's good advice. Anything else you want to leave the creative cuties with? If they're either working a 9-to-5 or thinking about working a 9-to-5 or getting out of a 9-to-5, any thoughts, feelings, emotions?
Yeah, use ChatGPT.
I agree. I co-sign that. ChatGPT is my best friend. I don't care what anyone says. AI is the shit.
I'm a big proponent of ChatGPT. And even if you don't have anyone to piggyback ideas off of, or if you want someone to sort of like listen to you and give you some advice, I've been finding myself daily asking, you know, just saying, hey, ChatGPT, how are you? I have a question about this. Whether you're interested in like diving deeper into your 9-to-5, or if you're interested in finding the creative outlet outside, or if you're interested in leaving, you'll get some ideas for sure from ChatGPT. And I think that those of us that are not moving toward the tools that are available within reason and using our own expertise in amalgam with these new AI tools, I just think there's a lot that can be utilized there.
There is. And even I know so many of us struggle with setting prices when we're working in the entrepreneurial world. You can literally ask ChatGPT how much you should charge, which I have done. So I was thinking about teaching a course and I put in the course curriculum and I asked what would be an appropriate amount for this course. It gave me a number and I thought that was a little low. I was like, I think I could charge more than that. So I put in my bio and resume and said, given my bio and resume, do you still think that's an appropriate amount? And it's like, actually, given your bio and resume, and then it raised it by a significant amount. So one thing we struggle with is creating prices for our offerings. ChatGPT can help with that too. It is such an incredible tool. And it's not always going to be 100% accurate. Like, for instance, a lot of times I'll use it to like generate my first title for the podcast and then I edit it and I put it in Lauren terms, but it triggers an idea, or I'll give it my idea and then it gives me another idea and then I edit it from there. But I really can't recommend it enough. Don't be afraid of AI. Part of why I created this podcast is because AI can't be creative. It can only replicate human creativity. So don't be afraid of it. It can take the like monotonous thinking, hard work out of it so you can actually utilize real human creativity. Well, on that note, Timmy, thank you for being here. I love you. I appreciate you. Timothy Michael Blewett, actor, writer, financial aid counselor, and future beard oil curator. That is something you've been doing as well, as creating beard oil.
Yeah, that's my craft, because I wanted something physical. I recognized, if anything, of this whole journey of being an artist and an actor and traveling the world and joining in this 9-to-5, which is all digital and all very important, but I don't have anything that's mine.
Yeah.
Like I have films that I can point to, but it's not, I feel like it's not the same as having something physical that I've like worked with my hands and my mind and mathematics and calculations and physically buying products and putting them together. So, and also just, I've had a beard for a long time now, and everyone from my brothers to random people on the street in different cities around the world.
Oh my gosh.
Stop me.
His saying, beard is like catnip to men. They come up to him all the time and like, great beard, bro. Whoa. I love your beard. How'd you do it?
So I wanted to explore different ways of, I wanted to explore grooming and different ways of hydrating and moisturizing for people that have thick beards or beards or are interested in growing them. And I've been finding it really interesting. I'm a mixologist of essential oils.
Yes, and I've been finding it great because I get to steal his oils and use them on my face.
Yeah, you take my test products.
Sorry.
I like it. I like being of service. That's the big thing.
So, yeah, you'll catch his beard oil, his book, many of his acting endeavors coming out soon. Baby, where can they follow you?
You can follow me at The Feisty Rascal on Instagram.
Gorgeous. And
TimothyMichaelBlewett.com.
Oh yeah, check it out. And I would like to thank you, sweet creative cutie, for listening. Thank you to Rachel Fulton for producing and editing this episode. Thank you, Liz Full, for the show's theme music. And again, thank you. If you like what you heard today, remember to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and leave it a rating and review. Tell a friend about this show. because podcasts are spread person to person. Makes a, such a huge difference if you share the show with a friend. Post about it on social media. Tag me at Lauren LaGrasso, at Unleash Your Inner Creative, and at The Feisty Rascal so we can reshare to show our gratitude. My wish for you this week is that you just follow whatever it is that's on your heart and you trust your instincts, listen to the creative call, and know your own worth. Whether you're working in a 9-to-5, full-time artist, or anything in between, you are so deserving and you have everything it takes to do basically any job you want to because you're creative, honey. So trust in that. And baby, let's say it together. We love you and we believe in you. Talk with you next week.